Well, here we go again, huh? That took me back to the summer of 1970. I had a 66 Impala, two-door hardtop with a state-of-the-art 8-track tape player. And I had a Simon & Garfunkel tape. It was bright red. And I could say, there it is. But the band did that justice, did they not? Yeah, very cool. Well, I had an interesting week this week. I had some pretty extensive oral surgery done early part in the week, so I'm still kind of recovering for that, but that reminds me of a story. Is it okay if I tell one I've already told before? Is that all right? Okay. All right. Well, there's this guy who was a corporate trainer, and he was on his way to a gig, and he suddenly had a toothache, and he had to run to the dentist, and he was on his way out of town, so his time schedule was really tight, but he got to the dentist, got all numbed up and got the tooth fixed, and then rushed to the airport and got there just in time to plop down to his seat on the plane and sat down. The guy next to him turned to him and said, "What do you do for a living?" The guy said, "I'm a professional speaker." So whether I sound like it or not this morning, I'm a professional speaker. The sermon I want to share with you this morning actually had its beginnings in 1987, believe it or not. At that time, I was pastor of First Baptist Church in Prospect, Kentucky, and I also had a part-time job as a director of pastoral care of a little 60-bed hospital out in the country in Kentucky. And one of my jobs at the hospital was to wrangle the local ministers in. They had some problems with some of these evangelical Pentecostal ministers coming in and going door to door trying to convert people. Because, you know, you got a captive audience there and people are sick and scared and everything else. So I was given the unenviable task of making that better. So I put together a program that I called Passion and Compassion in Pastoral Care. Created a workshop and required the ministers who were going to be visiting in the hospital to attend that workshop before they had visitation privileges. I had the full support of the administrator of the hospital, and the ministers were not happy. For me to tell them they had to do something to go about doing their job. But we got it done. We got them trained, and they were better at balancing their passion and their compassion. But that started me thinking about these two dynamics that are present in our lives of passion and compassion. But as we look at passion, let me give you a technical definition there that I found along the way. Passion is a feeling of intense enthusiasm towards or compelling desire for someone or something. A compelling desire and compelling feelings. Now, we get descriptions of this from many different directions. One of them is the Bible, when we're talking about passion, about this intense feeling that we are to have and we're capable of having. Deuteronomy says, "And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thine heart and with all thy soul and with all thy might." And Jesus pulled that in when he was teaching as well into the New Testament even. And he added to that, he said, that's the first law that we need to be concerned about is loving God with every fiber of our being. And the second one is likened to it, and that is love your neighbor as yourself. So we're told there that this intense passion, this feeling is really important. In the book of Colossians, it says, "And whatever you do, do it heartily as unto the Lord." Do it with all your heart, not halfway. Do it with passion. And then in the book of James, "The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much." So passion has power behind it. And we're encouraged to live that way. And Jesus came along and said, it was in the Daily Word this morning, that we are to have life and have it abundantly. That sounds pretty passionately, doesn't it? So we have all these encouragements and indications about living in this passionate kind of way. But we find it out in the world, too, as well. There's this athletic attire company has this little check mark, you know, this logo. You know, you've seen that around. Yeah. What's their logo? What's their word? Just do it. Yeah. Passion. Live it. Make it real. And to be a little more crude than that, if you've ever heard of Larry the Cable Guy and his catchphrase, which is, "Get her done," which indicates energy and passion and movement and things happening. So we get this encouragement from all around us to live in this extremely passionate way. Now, one of the important things for us to realize is that we need to be careful while we're living in that passionate way, that our passion doesn't overshadow our compassion. These ministers that I had to work with in the hospital were letting their passion outrun their compassion. They were very passionate about what they believed. They were very passionate about their evangelism, and they weren't that concerned about the condition of the people in front of them as long as they could try to convert them. So there was a problem there where their compassion outran their compassion. Their passion outran their compassion. And that's something that we need to keep in mind, and I'll come back to that in just a minute. But we are called, we are equipped, we are designed, and we have the opportunity in this world that we live in to live passionately, to live with feeling. Have you ever been around some people that just were kind of flat? They weren't particularly happy about anything. They weren't particularly sad about anything. They weren't upset about anything. They were just kind of a blob, just kind of there. You really love being around those kind of people, right? Yeah. And you also know those people who have such an energy for life and so much interest in life, and they're doing something all the time and thinking about things and talking about things and feeling things. And those are the kind of people you really like to hang around with. And that's what we have the opportunity to do in this life, is to live passionately. And we're going to say some more about that later on. That's another whole sermon series somewhere else down the road. So what we're looking at this morning is balancing this matter of passion with the matter of compassion. Now, we said that passion is this intense feeling about something. Compassion, let me give you another definition here. Compassion is the feeling that arises when you're confronted with another's suffering and feel motivated to relieve that suffering. So compassion has not only the feeling toward others and the recognition, but also doing something about it. We all feel at some time or another empathy and sympathy, which means I recognize what somebody else is going through, and in some cases I can identify what they're going through, but empathy and sympathy don't require any kind of action to be what they are. Yet when we come to compassion, compassion is seeing someone in a situation and reaching out to do something about it. Seeing someone who's hurting and touching them. Seeing someone who needs a loving word and speaking that to them and looking into their eyes and giving them advice if that's what's needed. But taking some kind of action and being engaged in what is going on around you. And that is compassion. And the world needs compassion. When I was doing the research for this sermon, I was looking at compassion. And compassion is a pretty big thing, you know? There's a lot of information about compassion out there. Really fascinating stuff. Let me share some of the things I found. In my research, I found mention of intelligent compassion, of radical compassion, silent compassion, compulsory compassion, and self-compassion. I found scholarly articles about compassion-focused therapy, compassion fatigue, which is something I'd never thought of before, and compassion of pets and compassion for pets. And then there were books entitled The Compassionate Achiever, The Compassionate Connection, Compassionate Capitalism. I thought that one was kind of weird. I didn't look any further on that one. And Compassionate Statistics, interestingly enough. And you find as you study this topic that almost every area of science has dealt with compassion on some level. We find in philosophy, in the area of philosophy called ethics, we find compassion addressed there. In psychology, how the mind works, we find compassion addressed there. In sociology, that studies how people work together in cultures, compassion is studied there. And it goes on and on. Physiology, there's a great deal of study, especially in more modern times, about how compassion affects us in our bodies. And of course, in religion and spirituality, compassion is certainly talked about because we're encouraged, as Jesus said and many others, said we are to love one another, not just in theory, but in fact, in reality. So we've had from so many directions, we have had compassion to be examined, and we're learning more and more about it. And it's really fascinating. In one particular study, let's see what the guy's name was, James Doty, professor of neurosurgery at Stanford University, said in as little as 2 weeks of practicing compassion with intention has a positive physiological effect on the body. It can lower blood pressure, boost your immune response, and increase your calmness. And in looking at it larger, experiencing compassion, sharing, manifesting compassion can lower your heart rate, lower your blood pressure, boost your immune system, make you more calm and relaxed. On and on the benefits go. It's amazing how much difference it makes in when we experience compassion. Now, the interesting thing, too, they're beginning to find that not only does the person who's expressing the compassion reap these benefits, but the person receiving them does, too. These things happen to people who are blessed with compassion, who are enfolded in compassion. So all of these things begin to happen. So that, to me, that's a pretty good reason to pay attention to this, right? It's a pretty good reason to study this and look at it a little more closely and ask ourselves the question, not in a critical kind of way, but just in an understanding and compassionate kind of way, are we living in compassion? Are we taking advantage of the opportunities we have to express, to manifest, to share compassion with those around us? And we get, sometimes when we are living our lives, we're so intent on what's going on with us. And there's one danger in unity, and I guess it's true in New Thought altogether, and anything that promotes self-development, that we can become narcissistic. We can become so concerned about my stuff, I forget about everybody else. You know, I want to be healed. I want to be forgiven. I want to experience this. I want to do this. And we forget that everybody else is on that path too. And the interesting thing is that if we come together, it goes faster for all of us. It goes better for all of us. That's why we're here gathered here now. Why you're not sitting out on the beach all by yourself trying to make this work all alone. There's a time and a place for that. But there's something about coming together and sharing these ideas together and being together and having compassion one for another and doing what we can to support each other. Have you ever needed to talk to somebody? You didn't need anybody to solve your problem. You didn't need advice. You just needed somebody to listen. You know how wonderful that is when that happens? Perhaps you could be that for somebody along the way. When we are sensitive to those around us, and there's a time when just listening and nodding. There have been times when I've had people come into my office for counseling, and they start talking, and I don't say a word for the whole time, and when they're finished, they say, "Oh, I feel so much better. You are so good. Thank you so much."
Yeah.
And all I did was look at them and witness what they were doing. There are people who need that. I've talked to people who wanted to be more engaged with people, but were afraid to do that, were hesitant to do that because they didn't know enough. They didn't know what to say. And I always tell them, most of the time you don't need to say anything. All you need to do is be present. Be there and listen and witness this person who is going through this experience, and that gives them that support that they need. And that's a very simple thing. It takes practice to be able to do that. It takes willingness to step out and to take that chance, but that's important for us to be able to do that. So as we are living our compassion, just as with passion, it's important that our passion doesn't overshadow our compassion. It's also important that our compassion doesn't become so intense that we forget the passion part, that we forget to take care of ourselves. Thus, we have this phenomenon, which surprised me when I found it. This is the first time I had seen that when I was preparing for this sermon, the idea of compassion fatigue. And what happens is that very often when people are so into compassion, they're so into helping people, they're so into doing things for others that they neglect themselves. And no matter how good your heart is, no matter how good the thing that you're doing is, no matter how helpful it is for someone else, if you don't have some kind of inflow and you got all outflow, at some point you're going to dry up. And at some point you're going to not care anymore if you don't have some kind of input. So it's important that we have that balance in our life of passion and compassion, of giving and receiving. And just as you are compassionate with others, allowing someone else to be compassionate with you is important. Now, I won't ask you to raise your hand, but how many of you are really more likely to help somebody else than to let somebody help you? How many of you are more likely to listen to someone who asks for help than to be the one who asks for help? Yeah. A lot of us are like that. We're independent. We can do this ourselves. But think about it like this. When you are stiff and strong and I'm going to do it myself and I don't need anybody's help, you realize you're depriving somebody else the benefit of expressing their compassion? Because you remember what I said a moment ago? when you express compassion, you're better physiologically, you're better psychologically, you're better off all the way around. The studies are tending to, they can't project it yet because they haven't been going on long enough, but the studies are projecting that a consistent practice of compassion will help you to live longer. And not only just live longer, but your quality of life will be higher. So you want that for yourself, right? Yeah, so I'm going to practice compassion a little bit more so I can have that for myself. If you're not open to someone else sharing with you, you're depriving them of the very thing you're wanting. It makes sense? So when you are willing to ask for help, when you're willing to ask for somebody to be compassionate to you, you're giving them the opportunity of benefiting themselves. So it's a win-win situation. All the way around. Nobody loses in that situation. We all are blessed and benefited by that, by doing the right thing. How about that? So one of the things I want to challenge you to do this week, let's see if I had another story here. No, I won't do that one. The one thing I want to challenge you to do this week as you go out into your everyday life is just to simply ask yourself, is my passion and compassion in balance? Am I taking care of me? Am I living life with gusto? Am I going for it? Am I just doing it? Am I having a good time? Am I doing what I'm supposed to do? And am I looking around and being sensitive to the needs of those around me and those who I could help by simply touching or speaking a word or being still or looking in their eyes or taking a breath with them, whatever? Are those things in balance in this week? Now, I hope that you've learned by now, being in unity, that when I encourage you to do things like that, it's not with a critical eye. It's not with an eye of judgment. It's not with an intention of finding out what you've done wrong or what you've not done well enough. It's simply of being observant and saying, oh, you know, there was this opportunity I had and I missed it. I do that sometimes as, you know, a couple hours later, you suddenly realize, up, I had an opportunity there. If I just stood still long enough, it would have been better. So I remember that. So the next time I get to it quicker. But pay attention as you go through every day, this balance of passion and compassion. And when you find yourself not really caring as much, you know, I probably shouldn't tell people this. Not the first time I've done something like that, though. But there are times when I don't really care about the rest of the world. You know, I got my stuff going on, and I can say this because I don't believe in it, but the rest of the world can just go to hell, you know, in that moment. And I know it's not permanent. I used to judge myself because of that and feel really guilty because of that. And now I just say, there you go, I'm tired. I'll go take a nap and I'll be all right, and let it go. But when we find ourselves getting tired like that, the compassion fatigue, we find ourselves not really caring as much, that's a real clear sign that you need to just turn back over to the passion side and to do something for you. Do something that you enjoy. Do something that blesses you. Do something that takes you out of your routine. And then you can turn back with your compassion and find it renewed and be able to share it with the world. Because we have something that the world needs. We have something that those folks out there need to know about. And that's that truth of love and peace and light that is in us. And that idea of oneness. And through our compassion, we can share that with those around us. So again, your homework for this week: pay attention to your level, your balance of passion, of living life with that gusto, living life with that vim and vigor, is the words I've used. Myrtle used one of I should have lost it, but zeal is one of them too. Living life like that. Are you living it like that? And are you aware of the opportunities for you to touch someone, to speak to someone, to listen to someone, to care for someone? And keep those two things in really close balance. And we find the life going really, really well that way. Again, all the evidence, the scientific evidence, the bona fide scientific evidence is that compassion is good for you. Oh, I know what I was going to share with you. You know that Google and what's that other thing that the president uses all the time? Twitter. Not Tutor, it's Twitter. Those companies are developing compassion programs for their employees because they've realized that it works. Facebook even has a program online that they've developed to combat internet hostility, I think was the way they put it. So they're getting on the bandwagon too. They're realizing the truth that we've had around for a long time. That's exciting to see that happening. So let's be sure we stay a part of it and don't let them run off and leave us, because we know the good stuff. We can keep that with us. I want to close with a story that touches on compassion. Elementary school teacher was teaching one day, and she'd gotten to the place where the kids were going to learn fractions. And she taught about one half and one quarter. And to see if the kids understood about what that meant, what a half and a quarter meant, she said, okay, if you had a chocolate bar, would you rather have half of it or a quarter of it? And she went around in the room, and she had some refugee kids in her class from other countries that were fairly new to her class. And she noticed that almost all of them had that they want a quarter. And she thought, well, I'm going to have to teach this again because they don't understand. Everybody wants a half instead of a quarter. And when she asked them about it, they understood a half and a quarter. But one little girl said, I only want a quarter, and that way there'll be more of the chocolate bar for someone else. That's compassion. Let's go live it in balance now. Bless you.
Well, that grabbed me, so I'm a little teary. We do get so immersed in our own lives, don't we? Yeah. So now is the time to think about the value we place on our spiritual path, on unity and its wonderful spiritual principles, and certainly on Unity of Pompano as we seek to maintain this building and present classes and programs and activities for the betterment of everybody. So we hope that you will think about how you do spend your money, and instead of giving us the leftovers, make us part of your budget. Make spiritual giving part of what you value in life. And we certainly value your giving here, not only in your finances and your money, but certainly in your service and in your attendance, and in all the joy and the warm camaraderie that you bring here. So let's take all of those ideas in as we are so grateful. Let's bless our giving today. With a grateful heart, we acknowledge God as source of all that is. Today, we let go of any concern of lack and allow good to unfold in our lives. Good is ours. Good and more good is ours. And ever-increasing good is ours. Everywhere we go, we see this good. We feel it. We experience it. We freely give it. And it multiplies itself around us. And so it is.